Hello, welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Stevie and Craig with me to tell me why they think Eric Dier is a very lucky boy to only get a four-match ban for going into the stands. Meanwhile, Stuart Robson here. I try and get him on the same page as me to suggest that maybe Atalanta could win the Italian title this season. He dismisses it quickly. Spoiler alert. Meanwhile, Ali is here as well to look ahead to the game, which is live tomorrow on ESPN as NYCFC take on Philadelphia Union. And real top-notch questioning from me because I ask, what do the players eat before the game? A normal breakfast or their normal meal before they kick off a match? Yeah, I know. Let's start though, shall we? In La Liga, Barcelona with a 1-0 victory over Espanyol, closing the gap at the top of the table once again to 1 point. Espanyol, meanwhile, relegated for the first time in 27 years. We're here to talk about that game at the Camp Nou. Julian Laurent, Frank Leboeuf, and birthday boy, Ali Moreno. Hey. Ali, what a birthday treat. 90 minutes of watching that rubbish.
Yes, indeed, a birthday gift for me. I have to say, the best thing that could have happened to the game was maybe the red cards. Maybe that's a highlight because that opened up a little bit of space for both teams. But Espanyol never really wanted to get out and attack Barcelona. Even though, if you look at the game and the balance of the match, the first two really good chances of the game fell to Espanyol on the counterattack. One to Embarba down the right-hand side and Vidal down the left-hand side. And he hits the post. Embarba takes a shot to the far post and Ter Stegen comes up with a big save. Barcelona, after so much optimism following what was a very impressive last game, you thought, okay, well, maybe this is where they play Villarreal. They look good doing it. Antoine Griezmann is playing in the position that he prefers. And Lionel Messi is just going to drop back in a playmaking position. It's all going to be great. And it wasn't. And something that I was concerned and fearful of following that Villarreal match was that when things are not going well in the attack for Barcelona and you're not getting the same fluid movement that you did against Villarreal, you saw that Lionel Messi, instead of staying underneath the strikers, he started drifting into wider positions. Then that forced Antoine Griezmann to drop into a playmaking position. And so whenever the ball was played into the 18-yard box, as Suarez is moving off the ball, he's the only option inside the 18-yard box. Messi's out wide, Griezmann is underneath, no options in the attack, and there's nobody to put the ball in the back of the net if not for Luis Suarez.
Jules, what happened? On your podcast, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on TikTok, on MySpace, on Friends Reunited, you were telling everybody that Antoine Griezmann playing in the right position will prove to be the greatest thing that Setien has done. We thought we'd solve the puzzle. Yet today, Barcelona, very lethargic.
Yeah, that's true, very lethargic, although the trio Griezmann, Messi and Suarez is involved on the goal. And, you know, I thought, obviously, Ali is right on everything he said. It's easier to play that way against Villarreal, who are an attacking team, who will leave you a lot of space, who will have quite an expanding style of football and performance, than against Espanyol, where it's 11 men behind the ball, where there's no space, and where you're very static because there's nowhere to go, really. So it was always going to be a tricky game, regardless of your formation and what kind of game plan you had for a game like the one tonight. So it's I think it's hard to judge after what we saw against Villarreal, is the two sides of that formation. I did think that the Griezmann ball through for Suarez in the first half was the only good moment that Barca had in our first half, and then Suarez missed that chance. And at times tonight, he didn't really look fit, I thought, and even struggled to run at times. He scored the goal, but on that chance especially, it was really strange the way he hit it with his left foot. It almost looked like a pass and not even a shot. But I think they will still need to work on the link of play between the three up front. And after the goal, there's another move where Messi passes to Griezmann, who looks for Suarez in a water sort of backing thing. So it would take a bit of time, but it was always going to be harder tonight against a team that plays so defensive than against Villarreal.
I suppose that Barcelona did win, Frank. But it's no surprise that Espanyol came there and put up the formation that they did. But Barcelona should be used to that, to be breaking down these sort of defences. Let's not forget, Barcelona didn't have a single shot on target at home in the first half.
Yeah, that was very appalling. And at the same time, it takes two to tango, as we all say. And Espanyol Barcelona did everything to shut down the game and give no chance to Barcelona. That's fair, because they know that they're not good enough to compose with Barcelona if they want to attack and play like Villarreal did the game before and be smashed back by the Barcelona Football Club. So you know that's going to be a problem to Barcelona if you really stick together at the back and you play not maybe 11 at the back, but at least 9 at the back with a goalkeeper included, and don't try to play. But at the same time, they had the best chances to score in the first half, and Barcelona had almost none, was only with the chance with Suarez and the free kick of Messi. I don't know what's going on with Barcelona when they know that they're going to have to find a way in a very crowded space, when they have to go on the side, but they keep on going in frontal, central, and they don't try to change the pace of the game, the rhythm of the game. Maybe they're not capable of, but if they're not, they have people on the bench for that. I don't know why Kike Setién kept Ansu Fati on the bench, Riqui Puig on the bench, and just put Ansu Fati half-time, where unfortunately he got red-carded straight after. But you have to pick the right 11 players to start according to what you're gonna, what you expect to see from the team you're gonna play against. And we all knew that Espanyol Barcelona was gonna play like that. So why do you play with slow player, with player don't change the, or not able to change the pace of the game? I don't know. That's another mistake, I think, from Kike Setién this season.
Frank, you mentioned the red card. Was it the right decision?
I think it's a bit harsh on the two actions, in a way that we compare with what we saw with Nketiah yesterday with Arsenal-Leicester, where Nketiah didn't touch the ball and kicked straight the player and almost kicking broke his knee. The two players, they get the ball first and then they hit the player. So, yeah, it can be a red card. I think a yellow card would have been enough. On top of it, when you see that none of the two players got injured after that. But I can understand that the ref can give also a red card because it's the way they attack the ball, it's also dangerous. So I can understand that too.
What do you think, Ali? Was it a red?
Yeah, both of them were red cards, and I can tell you that Paul Lozano's red card for Espanyol had to be a red card once you had given the red card to Ansu Fati, because they were very similar plays, very similar instances. So if you're going to give that red card to Ansu Fati as he comes and makes contact with the ball, but on the follow-through makes the contact that he makes with the player, then similarly, Paul Lozano does exactly the same thing with Gerard Piqué. Comes over the top of the ball and makes a contact the way that he does, endangers the safety of the player. I don't think there was any doubt that that second one was going to be a red card once you had set the precedent of sending Ansu Fati off just a couple of minutes earlier.
Any chance of Barca? 1 point behind Real Madrid with a game in hand. 4 matches ago for Real Madrid, 3 for Barcelona. Jules?
I think it'd be too difficult. I mean, I don't see Real Madrid dropping any points against Alaves, for example, in the next game on Friday night. I don't see them dropping points against Granada in the next game either. Barca will have to go to Valladolid as well a couple of days before that. Of course, it can still happen. Let's not forget as well that in the head-to-head, Real Madrid are ahead, so it's actually a 2-point lead now, not just a 1-point lead. So I just don't see it happening.
This show's so funny. Jules mentioned Friday, that will be the draw for the Champions League after the win against Villarreal. You know, everyone was quite positive and thinking, you know, maybe this could be a run that Barcelona could make in the Champions League. How do you get them consistently good, Ali? I suppose that's the question that Barca fans want to know. So when they go into those matches in August, you feel confident that we can see that sort of performance they put in the first half against Villarreal, as opposed to that shocking display that we saw in the opening 45 minutes today?
It's not a straightforward answer, Dan, and it's a quite complicated one, because you can, as I mentioned earlier, the first good chances, real chances in the game fell to Espanyol. And let's not forget as to what this Espanyol team is, a team that this far into the season, they've only won 5 games and they have the worst offensive record in the league. And yet in transition, they were still able to create clear opportunities against Barcelona. And in the end of the game, Barcelona is hanging on at home, at the Nou Camp. They are the ones hanging on against Espanyol. Not just passing the ball around, not just keeping possession, not dictating the pace of the game, but Espanyol pushing forward and Barcelona having to defend and Ter Stegen having to come up with a save. So right now you look at Barcelona and you can hang on to the Villarreal game if you want, but the totality of Barcelona as a team goes beyond the one positive performance that they've had. You have to look in terms of this team defensively. They have issues with the speed of the game. Whenever they play against somebody that has change of pace, that's going to be complicated for them because they like to commit numbers forward. They lose the ball in a bad area because their possession hasn't been nearly as good and nearly as effective. And now you're tracking back, hoping that Gerard Piqué can cut out the danger. And if he doesn't, then Ter Stegen's got to come up with a big save. If those things don't happen, Barcelona is trailing. And when they start trailing, that's when Lionel Messi tries to do his own thing because he's trying to resolve a problem. That's when you're going to need an outstanding performance from Antoine Griezmann with consistency. That hasn't quite happened. That's when you're going to need a healthy Luis Suarez. He doesn't look healthy to me. And so all in all, I just see a Barcelona team that is flawed. And eventually these things are going to show up, and they're going to show up in a big way. Certainly Champions League will be the sort of stage in which you would expect this sort of thing to show up again.
Final question, Jules. And I know both Manchester City and Barcelona still have work to do, but say they both make it through to the quarterfinals. With your PSG fan zone, fan TV, big old supporting hat on, Bayern Munich, Manchester City, Barcelona. Who do you want in that order?
I think I go Barcelona first. I think City are a step above, wow. And I think Bayern are even a step above again. So, but over one game, and just one game in 90 minutes or 120 minutes, I think anything can happen against anyone. But I agree with everything Ali just said, and I still think that this Barca side will arrive in the Champions League way below a team like City and way below a team like Bayern.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. A lot more from Jules on the latest edition. Well, not that much. Gab talks a lot. We all know that. The Gab and Jules podcast. You can download that over on the website. Happy birthday, Ali. We'll be back tomorrow.
Thank you.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Meanwhile, in the Premier League, Liverpool still look on course to break that season points record with a 3-1 victory today away against Brighton. Meanwhile, Manchester City thrashed Newcastle United by 5-0. West Ham lost against Burnley, and Wolves struggling to qualify now for the Champions League after a 1-0 defeat away against Sheffield United. Jules, Craig and Stevie alongside me to discuss this. Craig, I rang you just before the show and I said, anything you want to talk about? You shouted at me.
No. No, nothing. I mean, you know, well, I suppose one thing from the... from the City game was, you know, obviously David Silva's performance. We know he's been doing that for years. But the other thing being is, and I know Steve Bruce has done some good things at Newcastle this year. Their points tally's not bad. But I really thought for a big club in the Premier League match, it was embarrassing. Now, we know City can do that to teams, some teams. However, the lack of any effort to get on the front foot from Newcastle, who are not fighting relegation by a long stretch, was embarrassing. And I'm sorry, but it's happening too much these days. And some of these Premier League teams really need to get their finger out. I mean, at least Brighton Hove Albion, let alone Brighton, whilst losing to Liverpool, making mistakes which cost them, at least they had a goal. At least they played some football. At least they put Alisson under some pressure. Newcastle were a shambles. And I'm sorry, but it does happen too often in that league in particular, and it's not good enough.
Can you not give Steve Bruce and Newcastle a pass, though, Craig, as many had them to be relegated at the start of the season? It was all doom and gloom. You know, going and losing against Manchester City, even though in the manner that they did, surely is a reward, or the fact they're playing with house money, surely that doesn't really matter. It doesn't need to make you that angry.
Well, watching a team in the middle of the Premier League with a fan base and a budget like Newcastle United, and I know it's not the biggest in the league, but watching them just meekly lie down and be splattered whilst they're not going to be relegated was embarrassing. And I'm sorry, but we haven't got much else to talk about today because Liverpool have won the league at a canter and City will get in the top four. But do we want to continue to watch this kind of pasting? And I can understand if they were in fourth from bottom or something, playing so defensive. But now, I don't think it's acceptable to lie down and roll over when you're a Premier League team. Man City, Liverpool away or not, it doesn't matter to me.
Stevie?
I think probably Newcastle are not a good example to use because whether they're fourth bottom, middle of the table or fourth from top, that's what they do. And it is... You know before there's a ball kicked what's going to happen, and it was almost a case of, well, is it really possible that City could be as bad in front of goal as they were the last time out? And you knew it wasn't going to be possible, and that's why you end up with a complete and utter pace and possession-wise and goal-wise. And, you know, I think Newcastle and some other teams, Craig's right, they don't even try. I mean... To lose a game 3, 4 or 5 and not even try just seems wrong professionally. But it seems to be accepted by too many teams.
And Jules, it was a trend, wasn't it? People would say, in the Premier League, it's so great. Anyone can beat anyone. Everyone always tries hard. They don't roll over like in France or in Spain. But we are seeing this more often. And I know it's the end of the season. And you can argue maybe that this is... But it isn't an anomaly these days.
No, that's right. It's not an anomaly. And especially, as you said, a team like Newcastle, who could surely be playing in a different way, could try harder for sure. They had players, you could think, on the counter-attack, if they were really trying, could disturb this Man City team, who you would expect would have played really high home game like this. And Saint-Maximin and Almiron and players like that could have run in behind, for example, going behind, maybe cause a bit of problems. But when you play pretty much 11 players behind the ball, all in your last 30 yards, and so deep, with no intention whatsoever to go forwards, what do you expect? That's exactly what the boys have been describing. That's what happens. And I think it's a real shame to just give up on the game even before it started.
23 points, though, still remains the gap between City and Liverpool. When you see these sort of performances from City, you've got to wonder, Craig, why? Why is there such a big gap? Why have City dropped so many points this season?
Because they've made too many mistakes. Captain Calamity at the back. You saw the game against Chelsea a week or so ago. Gundogan and Mendy getting in the mess. We had a partnership of Otamendi and Stones today, two players that have struggled for various reasons. They've struggled in the left-back position. You've had Fernandinho moving out his midfield role into the back four. Okay, Rodri's come in and he's a very, very good player. But they've just made too many mistakes. And they are so gung-ho. They are so gung-ho going forward that they get caught. They get caught out because they don't have enough players switched on when they're attacking. They don't have enough players switched on defensively. And so we know there's not a 23-point gap really between the teams in terms of the squad, but there is in terms of the league table, and that's something that Guardiola and the board will have to address in the summer transfer window, whenever that is. And I think they will, but look, we know going forward they can carve any team in the world open, and that's why they are, I think, still favourites for the Champions League in its cropped format.
Are they going to buy a defender, Jules?
Yes, they will. I expect them to buy a centre-back for sure, and John Stones probably will leave the club as well this summer. And Eric Garcia might do too as well and go back to Barcelona. But yeah, a centre-back for sure, a left-back. Probably, you would even think a right back, they need someone else because Joao Cancelo hasn't worked out. Kyle Walker is already in his 30s and certainly not looking at his best or the best version of him that we've seen in previous seasons. So they need to strengthen at the back. I think Pep knows it. and whether it's Koulibaly or Skriniar, or it would be a one of players with that kind of caliber as centre backs, especially. So Craig is right, too many mistakes, and Guardiola summed it up really well after the Southampton defeat a few days ago. He said, this is our season. It's exactly that. We make a mistake, we get punished, Zinchenko in that occasion, and then we have loads of chances and we don't score because they haven't been efficient enough in the box in some games either, scoring-wise, and that cost them dearly too.
It's interesting, Dan, because he almost sees fullbacks as, you know, arguably the most important position in his team. Because if you remember when he got the job, it was one of the first things that he did the surgery on was the right and left backs. Because they do play such a prominent role. We see them tucking into the midfield when they've got possession. We see them playing as wingers like a lot of the midfielders, a lot of the fullbacks do these days. But they probably get as much possession as anybody in the City side. So whilst he'll definitely be chasing a centre-back, if not two, if the fullbacks are not performing to how he wants them, his whole philosophy starts to creak a little bit and starts to struggle. So watch out, as Joe said, for him being in the market potentially for one, if not two.
Meanwhile, Liverpool beating Brighton. This game was pretty much over in the opening 10 minutes. And within that 10 minutes, you kind of saw a microcosm of how Liverpool have become so successful, Stevie. Obviously pressing Brighton, making them make mistakes, and then very clinical in front of goal. You've talked about the fact that if you look at the success of Manchester United, they brought in a big player pretty much every season when they are successful. How difficult is it for Liverpool to recruit players and they know that are going to come in and fit in this system to help this side?
Well, clearly the better quality of player, then the more chance there will of coming into the system. I'm assuming that on different parts of the field, there's no question Klopp has different ideas of what's needed. If you look at the middle of the park, for example, every single one of the players you could say is a blue-collar worker, you know, nose to the grindstone, get the miles in, get the ball back and get it to the front three. And the front three pretty much are, I want you up the other side of the field 90% of the time, and I want you with pace, and I want you to be greedy, I want you to take shots and get after it. And so he obviously has a certain type of player, but obviously, again, the problem you have when you're sitting where Liverpool is how do you tempt a world-class player to come and not be able to guarantee him a spot? That's about as hard as it gets, but no question, he's got his eye on a certain type of player. And from the players they've brought in, that's clear because, you know, there's a couple of big money signings that we've all talked about, and Van Dijk and Alisson, but the rest have all been smart, good business-like, good footballing decisions. You know, your Manes and Salahs, Firminos. So they've definitely got a way of recruiting a certain type of player, and that certainly makes it easier to bring a player like that to Liverpool rather than a superstar already.
Your boy Jordan Henderson on the score sheet. Nice goal for him as well, Jules. Are you still very much leading the campaign that he should be nowhere near player of the season discussion?
It's a lovely goal, and he's a lovely guy, and he's a good footballer. It's just that there are other Liverpool players that I prefer. I'm not the biggest fan of Jordan Henderson, as you all know now. And we've had this discussion before on who should get player of the year and this and that. But good on Jordan. Well done, Jordan. It's a nice goal, very good goal, and it's a very good season as well from him.
Oh, how patronising. God, I'm sure he can sleep well at night, though. He's in the conversation, though, isn't he, Craig?
Yeah, I think for consistency he is, and, you know, for improvement over the years he's been at Liverpool, there's been a gradual progression to where he is now. And Jurgen Klopp pretty much knows what he's going to get from Jordan Henderson when he steps on the field. He's neat and tidy. He started to pop up with the odd goal. He's going to work his socks off. He's going to win his challenges. He's going to track back. He's going to do every side of the game. And you know, for a guy who came to Liverpool as a bit of a water carrier, was not a very exciting player. He's come a hell of a long way. But look, going back to the point Stevie was talking about with signings, we know they missed out on Timo Werner for what we think was financial reasons because of the pandemic and the rerouting of the budget. But I think it is hugely important for Liverpool that Klopp does go out when the window opens and refreshes this squad, because the worst thing that they could do, in my opinion, was just keep with what they've got. Now, what they've got is great, but it's, I always think it's important that when you're on the top of your game, you go out and you freshen it up. You keep people on their toes. And I think it's imperative that Liverpool do that this summer, to come out strong and refreshed again next year, and the players know that they're going to have to be on their toes to get game time.
A couple of other points of business. The first, the banging, Stevie. Is that your granddaughter?
It was.
The second one is that Eric Dyer was given 4 matches for going into the stands after the match to confront someone who was fighting with his brother. 4 matches, is that right for you, Stevie? It seems to have sparked quite the debate.
What a lucky boy. 4 games. I mean, you can get 3 games for breaking somebody's leg during a game. Yeah, I think he's very fortunate to get 4 games. You know, as professionals, there are certain things that you don't need told you cannot do. And one of them is go into the stand and confront a supporter for any reason whatsoever. You do not do it. So for him to get 4 games, I think, I hope they don't do any of these silly appeals or anything. Because if he does, then somebody needs to take him aside and tell him he should be thanking his lucky stars that he only got 4 games.
Craig, do you agree?
100%. He's lucky he's not going to be 6 games or 8 games or longer, because and you can take all the sentimental claptrap out of it. You can't leave the field of play as a player and go into the stands, right? No matter what happens. And vice versa. You're not allowed to leave the stands as a supporter and jump onto the field of play, because you know what happens there. There are rules and regulations, right? Whether we like it or not. And I'm sorry, but you can't be taking that. There's stewards at the ground. There's police at the ground. And all these scenarios are there to be adhered to by these stewards and police, not by players. And so I think they've been quite lenient in giving him a 4-game ban.
No, if you think about it, I think the guy that came on and assaulted Jack, tried to get at Jack Grealish and actually did assault him, I think he got a night in jail and banned for life. And then Dyer's gone into the stand to go after somebody and he gets a 4-game ban. Seems a little... He seems that he should be very fortunate, Dyer, don't you think?
One last thing, Jules. We're hearing reports that IFAB are going to introduce 5 substitutes for next season as well. Why?
It's exactly the question I've been asking myself all day. Why? Why would you do that? I mean, I thought it was stupid from the beginning, but you can understand it. Why, after the pandemic and with all those games almost back-to-back, it made some sense. Although, like we've been saying on the show, I think the advantage is far too much, the bigger squads and the biggest teams. But to make it for next season, the whole of the season as well, is just completely crazy, I think. And for me, completely out of order from EFAB, who I already thought were completely disconnected from the world of football, actually, despite making the rules of it. But now it's just confirmed to me that they're completely out of touch with football.
Craig?
Absolutely. I don't. This is clearly EFAB sat there twiddling their thumbs with nothing better to do. And we don't need it. Teams don't need it. Players don't need it. Okay, at the moment, we can live with it. We can live with the water breaks at the moment. I mean, that'll be the next thing, you know. Oh, let's bring the water break in full-time. Oh, let's have a little stop to massage the player's ego for a couple of minutes. Oh, it's raining, let's stop the game. It's dangerous. You know, these people that sit in these boards are, as Jules said, are disconnected, and they're almost trying to make their own existence clarified. And why they need to be there making these decisions, because they're trying to change too many things. We're still trying to figure out the technology. We're still trying to figure out the handball law, which is much more important than worrying about bringing a couple extra subs on. And as Joe said, and many people have said before, if you're the Man City's, Liverpool's, or all these big clubs, and you're bringing on players to change a game that would walk into 95% of the other teams in that league, that's just wrong. That's just pure wrong. But these people, they don't see that, because they don't think before they make these laws. They just go ahead and do it to be busy and, as I say, justify their existence.
Last word on this, Stevie, to you.
Absolute nonsense. I wouldn't waste my time trying to justify a reason. It's complete nonsense.
Thank you very much. For more nonsense, be sure to check out Extra Time. Stevie and Jules answering your tweets. You can look at that over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
A number of matches in Italy, meanwhile, today. Wins for Roma and Napoli put them fifth and sixth, respectively, both leapfrogging AC Milan. But Atalanta move up to third in the table after a 2-0 victory against Sampdoria. They left it late, but that is now 11 wins in a row for something that is very much a fairy tale story. You think of fairy tales, you think of Stuart Robson. Robbo, am I stretching here? Atalanta against Juventus on Saturday. They beat Juve. 6 points then would separate them with six matches to go. You see where I'm going here?
I can see where you're going, but it's not going to be Atalanta are going to win the title. It's going to be Juventus who win the title. But Atalanta have got every possibility of beating Juventus. They've been a fantastic side. They're on a great run. They play a different style of football to everybody else in Serie A. They went with their three at the back, the two wide centre-halves make overlapping runs. But they don't just throw people forward. The two midfield players then fill in for them. And they've got two exceptional players, two players that make them tip. Papagomez, who's as good as anybody in Serie A at the moment at finding a pass and keeping the ball and manipulating it. And Ilicic, you know, he's getting on a bit and, you know, he's not as mobile as he used to be. But when he gets on the ball, he makes things happen. And Zapata up front, you know, he can run in behind. He's got good strength. He's got good technique as well. They're a very good side and they're going to be very difficult for Juventus to beat.
We talked about the Champions League draw earlier on in the show, Robbo, discussing who basically we're talking Jules and who PSG might want out of Barcelona, Bayern Munich or Manchester City, given their current form. Initially, when you looked at this through to the quarterfinals, thinking what everyone's going to want to play Atalanta. Now, do you think that mindset's changing?
I think so, because Atalanta play, as I said, a different style of football to everybody else. They've got exceptional players in those three players that I'm talking about. They know exactly what they're trying to do. They're on a great run. They are playing with confidence. And I'm not sure that the other teams will take them quite as seriously and they won't understand some of the aspects of their play. I think they're a dangerous team to play against at the moment. In a one-off game, I think they could beat anybody.
Meanwhile, Robbo, I think you told me, I think we were out and you said you did like 180 matches last year as a co-commentator. I imagine most of them were rubbish. But then you have games like we saw yesterday between Milan and Juventus, which you just couldn't script, which is why we love this game, which is why we watch these matches. How does that rate in the matches that you've commentated on over the years?
Well, a great one and one of the best, because you couldn't see it coming. Juventus weren't playing particularly well. They scored a goal from Rabiot, a great goal with a good run from Higuain. We saw the run from Ronaldo, which he's got to do a bit more often, coming spinning and getting in behind. And at that point, Juventus thought they'd won. And it just shows, as soon as you show that bit of complacency, you're in trouble because you can't then pick it up again. The penalty decision, whether it was right or wrong, I think it was the right decision against Bonucci when Rebic got to the ball first, hit Bonucci on the hand, the penalty. And you could tell it changed everything. It changed the atmosphere of the game. Suddenly Milan thought they were going to break Juventus down. Juventus couldn't pick their game up again. And I thought it was an exceptional second half from Milan. And they have been improving under Pirlo. It's a shame that it looks as though he might be going at the end of the season.
I know, it's kind of ironic that he could be. But you talk about how it just changes the atmosphere. It's just one goal. There's no crowds. This is a Juventus side who come in as defending champions, full of winners within that side. How could they go from what they were doing to conceding those three goals in 6 minutes?
You could say that they're missing a centre-half. Regani doesn't play very often and he didn't have a particularly good game, so that was a worry. I'm still not sure about the attitude of Pjanic at the moment defensively. Yes, when he gets on the ball, he makes things happen. Rabiot, likewise, isn't a great defender. Cuadrado was breaking forward but not always running back quite so quickly. Then when they tried to change it, the subs that came on didn't affect the game one iota. Ramsey kept on getting caught on the ball. Alessandro played the crossfield ball for the goal as well. So Sarri got it all wrong when he made his substitutions. And they could, you know, every team that shows complacency takes their foot off the pedal and then you try and get it back, it never happens. And that was the problem with Juventus yesterday.
Strange question to ask, given that they are top of the table and heavy favourites to win the title. But where is Sarri at the moment, in your opinion?
I don't think he's got the best out of these Juve players. I don't think they play exceptional football at the moment. I don't think he's got his ideas across to the players. I'm not sure the players are enjoying his style of football. But if you win the title, and they do, if they can beat Lyon to get through to the next round of the Champions League, everyone will say he's doing OK at the moment. But it's not all right. I think come the end of the season, he may well be changed.
How concerned would you be if you were Juventus looking ahead to that clash against Lyon, who, of course, haven't played for a very long time, given the suspension of the French league? It's not a given, is it, that they're just going to sail through?
No, no, because as we've said all along, Juventus, they're going to win the Serie A, and they've played well in patches, but they're not playing at their very best, and they've got that one goal advantage, Lyon. The only problem that Lyon have got, we don't know what sort of form they're going to be. We don't know what sort of training they'll be doing up to that game. We don't know whether their players are going to be fit or they're going to be fresh, how they're going to respond. It's a big, big game for Sarri and those Juventus players.
Stuart Robson, as always, thank you very much. Just a reminder, Italian football then continues over the next few days. A couple of games for you on Thursday. But just whatever you're doing, watch Juventus against Atalanta on Saturday, 3:45 Eastern on ESPN+. These two teams, of course, could be first and second come the end of the season. And I'm still pushing for it. Atalanta with the win. And we might just have a little bit of a tiny smidgen of a title race in Italy. And then on Sunday, we've got six more matches for you. Ali with me to look ahead to the two MLS matches tomorrow. Let's start with the early game, Ali. NYCFC taking on Philadelphia Union. I've got to ask, just from a player's perspective, this is going into the unknown a little bit, isn't it? Kicking off at 9 a.m. How will that affect you? How will that affect the game, do you feel?
Well, it's weird. It's odd. You talk about players, and one of the things that really comes up in preparation for a game is a routine. And you try to establish that routine over the years and things that you feel comfortable with. Well, I can tell you with 100% certainty that there's nothing routine about having a pregame meal at 5 a.m. That does not compute. That does not work. And that in itself is a challenge. And so I'm sure that the teams will look at the possibilities and the things that they can do in order to maximize the sleep time for their players and the rest, the appropriate rest, and then the appropriate time to have a good, solid breakfast and hoping that you have your players ready to go at 9 a.m. in the morning. But you are correct, Dan, in asking, is it odd for a player? Yes, it is. You betcha it is. And it's one of those things in which players are going to have to get used to it, because that kickoff is going to come and you better be ready to go. 9 a.m. is not ideal, but I suppose that in the heat of Orlando, it beats playing at 11 a.m. or 2 o'clock or 4 o'clock for that matter.
I'm intrigued about the whole eating situation you've just brought up then. So do you just have, so my normal breakfast, I like a Special K with some bananas on top, but then that's not going to get me going for a whole match, is it? So then do I have a bowl of pasta, something like that? Like, how would you handle it?
Well, yes, and it's a fair question to ask when you consider what your actual preparation for games usually is. So say you have a game at 7:30 at night, then usually the pregame meal will be 4 hours before. So 3:30, 3 o'clock, you have your pregame meal, then you have your meeting or what have you, watch some video if you need to. But that meal for that 7:30 match usually is a little bit of bland chicken and a little bit of bland pasta.
Right.
And the carbo load, and then you get your protein as well. But you're not having that at 5 a.m. in the morning. You're not doing that at 6 a.m. in the morning. And so it goes back to, okay, maybe you get your protein from something else. Maybe you're able to sneak in a yogurt here and there, but it's not ideal. And it certainly isn't what players are used to. And so they're going to have to make sure that they're prepared for how unique the situation is going to be.
Something else I want to ask you, but I won't because I'll get into trouble. Let's talk about the actual game, shall we, Ali? Who's going to win it?
Well, I think, I suppose the Philadelphia Union, and the reason I'm picking them is simply because there is there's certainty from Jim Curtin as to what he's going to expect from his team. And he knows his team very well. And he knows his player. This is a core group that has now been together for a couple of years. And Jim Curtin has been the head coach for that whole time. And so I think the fact that there is a a knowledge and a trust in the players that you have available, I think puts Philadelphia Union on top of NYCFC, because Ronnie Delia, the new manager for NYCFC, was just kind of getting things going early on in the season, and then everything shut down. Mm. And for as much as you can work in virtual training, or maybe you've been able to work over the last couple of weeks, it's not quite the same as having done it day in and day out for a couple of seasons now and really knowing full well what you're going to get out of your players. And so early on, I'm going to suggest that Philadelphia Union are ready for this more so than NYCFC.
And then looking ahead to the late game, Ali, obviously Montreal taking on New England. Thoughts going into this one?
You know, when you talk to people around MLS or you read sort of the previews, what this tournament is going to be all about, one of the teams that people kind of point at and one of the coaches that people point at is the New England Revolution and Bruce Arena, mm-hmm. because of his knowledge of coaching in this sort of environment, in this sort of tournament, whether that's a Gold Cup or the World Cup or so on and so forth. He has had experience in short tournaments. And so he may be able to have this team prepare properly for the tournament and saying, you know what? We just need to get out of the group stage. And from then on, we sort of manage what we do the rest of the competition. I think for both of this team will be critically important to get a result tomorrow so that they set up the rest of the group stage. If you go chasing points late in a group stage, regardless of what the competition is, you're probably not going to be successful. The winner of this game really puts himself in a leading position in the group and really allows himself to think about, okay, how do we now face the rest of the tournament? I think New England are favorites just because I just don't know where the goals are going to come from and from Montreal. Is it Boyan that is going to have a big tournament? Is it Maxi Urruti that's going to have a big tournament? Not so sure about the Montreal impact just yet. I'm going to go with New England.
Thank you very much, Ali. That's, of course, the late game. The early one, though, me and my Special K bananas, maybe some blueberries as well to treat myself. NYCFC against Philly, that game live at 9 a.m. Eastern on ESPN.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's edition of ESPN FC. Thank you very much to everyone who's been on. If you want to hear more from Stevie, his granddaughter, and Jules, be sure to stay tuned for Extra Time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Jules is with us, as is Stevie, who's very much on grandfather duty today. He's looking after Nora, who may or may not make an appearance, depending on her mood, throughout this. First question, who's been the best Premier League player since the lockdown? Ooh. Who are we going for, Jules?
I will go for a Manchester United player, and I'm torn between Bruno Fernandes, who basically picked up where he left it before the pandemic, mm-hmm. but I like the idea that Mason Greenwood really has been fantastic since the restart of the Premier League, and in a way we knew the talent was there, although he's a very young player, but the fact that the way the team has been playing also, but also I think all the hard work that he put on during the lockdown, he came up with, I think, 3 or 4 more kilos of muscles. You could tell how more muscly he is and lean he is as well. And I mean, those quick feet, right foot, left foot, the two goals he scored the other night were fantastic, especially the one with his right foot, I thought. So yeah, I would give it to Greenwood for the youth, the potential, and what he's shown already, and all that encouragement.
Very good, Jules. Keep seriously going through all of that noise. What's going on, Stevie?
I've no idea. I can't even move, can I?
Who's been the best player since the lockdown?
Oh, Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
And I'd have to say, you know, when the lockdown came, I thought, OK, this is a real test for him in particular, because he'd been so good before it. He'd made such a difference to them before it. Was this going to be a flash in the pan? Is this going to be just a fresh face that brightens everything up and they get some results? And the fact is, it's not been. He absolutely has been the best player since we started again, and got rid of all those questions. Certainly, I had was it a flash in the pan? It's no flash in the pan. The guy's absolute quality.
Next question is for you, Jules. I'm back and here to ask Jules a question. Does Guendouzi have a future at Arsenal?
I have to say, it's looking less and less likely. There's still that big issue between him and Mikel Arteta, which meant that's why he's been dropped from the first team squad for the last four games. And I, at the moment, can't see how this one gets resolved. He's a very stubborn young man, Matteo Guendouzi, and so is Mikel Arteta, not so young, but very much stubborn as well. And I just don't know how they sort this one out, how they make peace. And I think it's an issue. I don't think Arsenal want to sell him, but they might have to sell him if you don't get that issue resolved, if he's not going to play, if he doesn't want to play, if you don't want to play him. And also, if he doesn't want to stay there because, again, he wants to play somewhere where the manager will have faith in him, which is not the case with Arteta right now. So it's a very, very interesting case. And one, I think, is a bit of a shame because he has talent to offer if he could get a bit more mature and, you know, I think keep his head down, keep working hard, listening to what people are saying around him, which hasn't been really the case.
What's wrong with him, Jules? You're a young player, you're at Arsenal, one of the biggest teams in Europe. You've got a young coach who people are very excited about. What's his problem?
So he's highly confident in his own ability. I think we've all saw that. I think the way that he succeeded in a way at Arsenal in his first season last year when he arrived from nowhere, really. Nobody in this country, in England, had heard of him, pretty much. Playing in the second division in France with Lorient and how well he did in that first season. And I think maybe that success arrived very, very quickly, maybe too quickly even. And then I think he's very passionate. He loves this club, and we've seen some of the celebrations,
what?
Some of sure, the incidents
you can't,
before
you can't
as well.
Give me that. He's passionate. A man who's refusing.
He is.
Oh, man.
But if you let me finish, sometimes that passion, you know, or like goes over. And then he does crazy things like we saw against Brighton, which he should have never done. And I think that's the problem. And until he gained that sort of maturity to realise what he can do, what he can't do, again, listening of people around, doing what people are telling him to do, he would be a much better player. But that hasn't really been the case since the restart.
Stevie, I can only imagine what you're thinking.
Yeah, no, you're correct.
but maybe, well, clearly, you know what, maybe if he had a player...
But maybe if he had someone 20 like years of age. I would agree what I think you're going to say is about he doesn't have people around him that are helping him any. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
At the same time, when you're 20 years of age and you rate yourself the way he rates himself, then you wonder why he's ill-disciplined and immature. And that says it all. Yes, he doesn't have people around him. It doesn't seem that I'm going to keep him in check. But also, as I said, at 20 years of age, you should still be in dreamland, where every time you step on the field, you're the luckiest guy alive. Not a wizened old professional at 33 whose legs have gone, who thinks he can still run around that can't and knows better than everybody else.
He hasn't even been that good. Right, final point. Jules, what do you think What do you think? Now, this was on yesterday's show where Frank Leboeuf said that Willian should have kicked the ball out when Cahill pulled up with his hamstring injury. What do you think about being a fair player like Frank?
Yeah, I get it. I know sometimes some players do it, others it takes a bit longer or they don't do it. I mean, once you're in that kind of environment and it's a very competitive environment, it's a big game, it's early in the game, maybe you don't really realize, but you're so focused as well. I think I can't blame Willian, I think, and I would not want to blame anyone in that kind of situation. I know others would have done differently, but I think it's really tricky, unless you've been in that situation, to be able to say, oh, he should have done this or he should have done differently.
Right, what's going on, Stevie? Is she there now? Is Nora there?
Dan, let me ask Jules a question.
Go on.
Dan, let me ask Jules a question. Jules, was Frank involved with France when Thierry Henry used his hand against the Irish?
No, he had retired quite a while before.
Because that's the first thing I thought
you about. You wonder why he would have said
rubbish
if he had been his teammate.
Well, I was trying to figure out what he was talking about, because as soon as he started on about, oh, I would have put the ball out, I'm thinking, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. It was the first thing that came to my head. Was he playing with Thierry Henry, put that in with his arm?
He's too old.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Stevie.
I don't know what. Other than Paolo Di Canio, I don't know another proper footballer that would have stopped for anything. Because you know what? If you've got any brains, you put it in the back of it and you go, oh, no, what? What are you talking about? Oh, sorry. No idea.
Why would you do it in that weird voice?
Well, because that's what you do.
You just
try and kid on, you never notice. Then I'll tell you what. What a lot of absolute nonsense. You're going for the top four, you're going to go, no. I'll kick it out. Sorry, lads. He's fell over, he's top. Yeah, right.
Well, that's it. Thank you very much for extra time. Didn't hear Nora once at all, Stevie. Not at all throughout the whole thing.
Oh, she's gone up the stairs. I've got her locked up in the cupboard upstairs.
Yeah. We can still hear her, don't worry. That is it. ESPN FC back on your screens tomorrow. Be sure to join us. Until then, goodbye.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.